Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar, it's the Killer Bees.
Don't sweat the technique.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Killer Bees broadcasting live from Wakefield Crowbar, your spot to be all week. Tomorrow, Tejano night, 8 p.m., Los Clásicos, free music, no cover. Saturday, Canelo, UFC 301, no cover. How many places in town are doing that? Cinco de Mayo's drink specials all day Sunday, a DJ mariachi performance in the afternoon, Kentucky Derby on Saturday, happy hour for the next 2 hours, 50-cent boneless wings, $4 lemon drop shot, $29 high noon buckets. Thursday specials, by the way, $6 cheeseburgers, $6 makers, $25 Modelo buckets. Get to Wakefield Crowbar. We'll be here to 6, but the party going on all weekend at Wakefield Crowbar. 713-780-ESPN. We'll get into the what is your pecking order in the Astros bullpen in 3 minutes. 713-780-3776. That guy just knocked the eight ball in the corner pocket for the win. This guy texting in says that his prediction, well, it might not be a guy, I shouldn't do that. It's very sexist to me. My prediction for opening Thursday game is Texans at Kansas City.
I could see it.
I could too.
Yeah, that's definitely.
Will they go the Super Bowl rematch there, though?
Well, but you think about it, last year it was Detroit and Kansas City, and Detroit pulled off the stunner early on to kind of establish themselves as a contending team. I think that they could do that.
I could see it. I think that it's in play. I think it's a good
And honestly, I think it's a good move. If that's the game for the Texans, I think it's advantage Texans. I think the Chiefs come out slow. They got beat last year by Detroit.
Fat and happy.
Yep, fat and happy, and maybe, you know, with all their vets sitting in the preseason, I think it's a chance to catch them, too. I wouldn't mind that matchup at all.
Yeah, that's a good call. I think the time to get them is early. I like that, that point of view. Also, some news from Ari Alexander. He just tweeted this out. Christian Javier will go out on a minor league rehab assignment this weekend.
A lot of people were expecting him to start Sunday.
Yeah, the idea that Christian Javier was TBA is not true. Christian Javier is not the third man. He is not TBA. Christian Javier going on a minor league rehab assignment, which Dana Brown said Wednesday to the quarterback that they're getting Javier back next week. And he said that Wednesday?
He did.
So maybe one rehab assignment, and then he's back next week.
So he went from TBA to TBD.
What does that mean?
To be delayed.
Well, I know what TBD stands for. I'm seeing where your mind's...
To be delayed.
Oh, to be delayed. See, there you go. That's why I asked. Yeah. Yes, to be delayed. Christian Javier, grade the joke. 713-780-3776.
4-2.
I'll go 5-4. It wasn't his worst.
No,
it wasn't his worst.
Definitely not.
All right,
I feel so much better.
What is your what is your pecking order in the Astros bullpen? Because I think a spot has screwed it up yesterday in the 10th inning. If I'm being completely honest, 0002. You got to admit that Dusty's gut feelings have been better than a spotter's analytics. I would agree with that.
Yes,
I would agree with that.
You have to. Yep.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. So your 8-man rotation right now that you currently have rostered is, and this is alphabetical. Brian Abreu, Brandon Belak, Sean Dubin, Josh Hader, Seth Martinez, Rafael Montero, Ryan Pressly, Taylor Scott. So what is your pecking order? You can reverse engineer it. I think
I'm
going
to reverse it.
The easiest way to go.
Yep, I'm going to go. Hader's obviously the ninth. Pressly is the eighth. Abreu is the seventh, and that can always fluctuate based on matchups. I'm fine with that, but those are the three main guys. Okay, then Montero, which I'm not giddy about, but I think he's your fourth best relief pitcher, is going to be the sixth guy, and he's been that guy.
My fourth guy, right? Oh, you meant sixth
inning. Sixth, yeah.
I got you.
Sixth inning
bad.
Guy. And he's the guy that I don't feel great about, but I know he's been in that role. I'll hold my breath a little bit, but I think because of who else you have to choose from, I think he's that guy. Okay, so then if those are the first four, Seth Martinez to me is fifth. Because of the fact that he's been there, done that, and he's gotten you a lot of positive results over the last year or so. So I would say that's five. Then six, seven, and eight, I don't really – to me, I look at it and say it's probably Taylor Scott, simply because of when he's been in this year, as much as no one expected a whole lot from him. I think he's been relatively good for this team. And I think, again, because you have limited options, he would be my fifth guy. And then I think that from there you go Belak?
You go Belak ahead of Dubin?
Belak and then Dubin.
I would have the only objection I have to yours is I would have Dubin ahead of Belak.
And I don't disagree that that's a possibility.
But everything else is the same.
Dubin's got better stuff.
Yeah, I think Dubin's better. Now, Belak, I think, is better for his role where he can give you three innings, and he's got kind of a rubber arm, and he sucks, so you don't care if he gets lit up. I have the same thing. Hader, Presley, Abreu, Montero, Martinez, Scott, Dubin, Belak. I have no objection.
I think where it becomes like either or is, do you take a guy that's got more experience and has got had a little success in the major leagues with Belak, or do you take a guy that's got better stuff but hasn't really been kind of indoctrinated to everything Major League Baseball?
Well, it depends on the role.
Using it.
It depends.
Right.
Like if you're looking for one inning,
but like
the
last night,
down by two. Well, I'd rather have used Dubin than Belak.
Oh, for sure. But I'm saying from a Dubin perspective, that was a tough thing for him because
sure.
I think that was his high leverage of a situation he's been in.
Yeah. But I mean, if you're talking about which of the two would you rather?
Yeah. I don't believe I'm not a big Belak fan.
I do think they'll send Dubin down before Belak because Belak doesn't have options, and for some reason they feel like they need to keep Brandon Belak in this organization. Plus, Dubin needs to pitch like kind of pretty often because he's still very young.
I
don't really have a problem with that.
But with all the starters you're supposed to be getting back, if you're really looking at Belak as a spot starter and a long guy, you can find Seth Martinez could be that guy. There's lots of guys that could be that guy. I'm not worried about losing Brandon Belak.
No, I'm not worried about it either. But he's the emergency starter in case somebody gets scratched whenever you're in Chicago and you know you can't get somebody up there quick enough. And he's also the guy that's mopping up games. So like. It doesn't really matter who that guy is. It doesn't really matter what that guy's ERA is. I don't think that Brandon Belak is going to be in the organization for the entire year. But I do think whenever Javier – that's kind of interesting, though. Like, when Javier gets called up, who gets sent down? Because I actually think it's going to be Aaron Geddy.
I do, too. I really do. But I think that even as much as maybe short-term, the answer is you keep Belak up and you send Dubin down – I think in short order, Dubin's going to be the guy that fills the Belak role, and there's going to be no more Brandon Belak.
Well, I think that, when Javier gets brought up, I think, and let's assume that everybody else stays healthy. So Javier is going to be up next week, maybe. I think the move there is Arrigetti, because they're going to want Arrigetti
right.
to stay long, like extended, and still want him stretched out as a starter. When Urquidy comes back is whenever you're going to have to make the decision on Dubin versus Belak.
And I think that early on, it will be Dubin with that move right there.
And he's going down?
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think that by midseason or a little bit after that, when you have a little bit more stability with all the starters you've gotten back and you know where they sit and how they're throwing, that I think that it's eventually going to be where Belak, like, I agree, he's not going to be a part of the organization unless he clears and they put him on Sugarland afterwards. I think Dubin eventually becomes that guy because I think his stuff is better.
All right. So, we pretty much agree across the board here. Hader, Presley, Abreu, Montero, Martinez, Scott, and then Dubin, Belak, kind of depending on the role, whatever. Which kind of begs the question, why in the world was Sean Dubin in the game in the 10th inning yesterday? What was he doing in the game in the 10th inning yesterday when you had Taylor Scott ahead of him on the pecking order available, who was warming up, and then, of course, Seth Martinez there, too. Any objection to this one, Brian?
We all agree?
Yeah, I think the top six is really without a lot of debate. I mean, the only debate comes down to Dubin or Belak as your seventh and eighth guy, and we could probably see by the time the Astros get all their arms that are injured back, both of them wouldn't even be on the roster anyway.
Yeah.
Ideally.
Well, and I think that the problem that we have is because of the limited options, and because these are the guys that we're forced to deal with that the spot is dealing with, you look at it and say, you hope that when you get the starters back that in short order you can find better options than these guys if you want to upgrade some of those top six that we were talking about.
Astros lineup is out for today's game. A lot of people are not happy with it.
Can I guess why?
Yes.
Because our boy Joey
Loperfido.
No. Joey Loperfido's not in the lineup?
He's not in the lineup, but that's not the reason that
people
are upset.
Oh, I thought that's why people would be upset.
Because LT Allen is a lefty, so like it kind of makes sense. Give the guy a day. He's had an eventful whirlwind. Maybe he's a pinch hitter or something. But a lefty, Loperfido's numbers against lefties aren't bad, though. They're not as good against righties, but they're not bad against lefties. He's not awful against lefties. But, hey, give him a day after a whirlwind. I have no problem with that. It's because Bregman's still second. Altuve, Bregman, Yordan DHing, yes. Tucker, Pena, Yiner catching. Singleton, Dubon, Myers. So that's the Astros nine today. But the biggest objection is that Alex Bregman's batting second.
I could see, too, to the Loperfido point, that you got Jake in there because he hits lefties well. So that's fine. I mean, as we discussed, I would rather not have Bregman in the two-hole. I don't think they do anything before this weekend for the Seattle series, and it's going to have to be that he doesn't do anything tonight either, and it just gets to be the point where right now the experiment that they made putting him in second isn't working, and by the weekend when they know it's a big series against Seattle that they might try and tweak it.
713-780-ESPN. Our biggest fans just walked in the door. Great to see you guys. 713-780-3776. Kyle Tucker hit a bomb yesterday. Kyle Tucker's baseball savant excites me. What career highs will Kyle Tucker surpass this year? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Wakefield Crowbar on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar.
Killer Bees are live indeed from Wakefield Crowbar. Thursday specials, $6 cheeseburgers, $6 makers, $25 Modelo buckets. happy hour until 6 o'clock, 50-cent boneless wings, $3 Modelo Big Bar, Big Beers, $10 specialty pizzas. Saturday, busy day here at Wakefield Crowbar. Kentucky Derby in the afternoon. And then at night, Canelo fighting, not Oscar De La Hoya, but he's talking a lot of trash about Oscar De La Hoya. UFC 301, all of that no cover, by the way. Tomorrow night, Tejano night with Los Clásicos, live music, no cover. And then Sunday, Cinco de Mayo drink specials, DJ Mariachi performance in the afternoon. Going to be a great time here all weekend long at Wakefield Crowbar. Jose Urquidy news, Adam Spolane of the Highway to Hell is reporting that Jose Urquidy is throwing a simulated game this weekend and then is going to be deployed in a multi-start rehab assignment, which a pitcher gets 30 days. So, I mean, they have a month there after he goes back on his rehab assignment. But that's good news.
Encouraging.
Good
news. He's getting closer, and the closer he gets, the better the bullpen could be. So, and the rotation, possibly. So, good news that some of the depth could be back. Some of the better arms could be available so that you can disperse arms throughout the entire pitching staff so that we can see improvement based on the conversation we just had and the limited options in the bullpen.
So good news there. Good news indeed there. Great spot here, Wakefield Crowbar. Much like my Tex-Mex logic where they're defined based on three items, fajitas, margaritas, and chips and salsa, I define my bar, especially if they have food, with how good their wings are. If they have good wings, they have good food. And here at Wakefield Crowbar, they have outstanding wings. So that's my staples. Bar that serves food, better have good wings. They do here at Wakefield Crowbar. Just like Tex-Mex, you better have good fajitas, you better have good margarita, and you better have good chips and salsa. 713-780-ESPN. So Kyle Tucker hit that home run yesterday. Went a long, long way. I think it was 422 feet.
I was shocked it didn't get to the upper deck. It hit off the facade because he hammered that ball.
Yeah, he's on a bit of a heater right now. I think we're seeing the best of Kyle Tucker. Like, I think that Kyle Tucker is entering a 3-4 year stretch where he's going to be at his premium. He's going to be at his peak. This is the prime of his career. Now, of course, this is going to bring in the whole, the Astros have him under contract this year, next year, hashtag pay the man, which is really a different conversation for a different day. But he's 27 years old. A lot of players kind of enter their prime, mid to late 20s, some extended into their early 30s. Some that use performance-enhancing drugs carry it all the way into their 40s. But
yes, they do.
What career highs do you think are in play here for Kyle Tucker? Kyle Tucker, let's start with home runs. Kyle Tucker hit 30 home runs twice. He did it in 2021, 2022. Do you think he surpasses 30 home runs this year?
I do. I really do. I think that he got off to a slightly slow start, found it very quickly. Now he's hot. When he's hot, he's actually hitting tanks. He's hitting bombs. Those are the kind of things you like to see. I think that's definitely in play. I'm looking at more mid-30s.
He's currently in, I don't know if this pace is sustainable. He's on pace for 43.
I think that may be too many.
Probably, but would it shock you if he gets to 40?
No.
It wouldn't shock me if he gets to 40.
No, uh-uh.
It wouldn't shock me at all if he gets to 40 home runs.
I think the range is like 35 to 40.
I think 40 is probably the upside of that range. There's no doubt about that. All right, his career high in RBIs, he did this last year, 112 RBIs. Do you think that's in play this year for Kyle Tucker?
I do, because of the fact where he's hitting in the lineup and the fact that if we think he's going to hit that many bombs, I think there's a good chance there'll be some traffic on the bases for a lot of them. And I think that that's definitely in play because I think this is a better overall offensive lineup than even what they're showing, but better than it was a year ago. And I think it's definitely in play.
Yeah. He's on pace for 113. So it's slightly more than what he had last year. I mean, the guys hitting in front of him haven't been – like, Altuve's been really good, but, you know, Altuve usually drives himself in.
Right.
But maybe he'll have some opportunities with Altuve in scoring position. He should if he's batting fourth and Altuve's leading off. Bregman has been awful. So you think that Bregman would get on base more the rest of the year than his current pace. And then Yordan, I mean, his numbers aren't what you expect from Yordan Alvarez. So I think the chances are actually going to go up for Kyle Tucker. And Tucker's currently on the pace to break the RBI total. For him. How about stolen bases?
He had 29 last year?
30. Finished with 30.
Oh, that was the one that was controversial, right? Or was it the...
Well, he had an inside the park inside home, the home run that they later changed base. To a triple,
for the 30,
which would have been his 30th home run for a 30-30.
Yeah. Boy, this just brings back a bad taste in my mouth because of that stupid thing we did preseason when stolen bases.
And oh, you took Jake
Myers? I said Jake frickin' Myers. I'm going to say no. Well, Joe, you know what? Joe Espada is more aggressive on the base path, but I think he's got other options to be aggressive on the base path. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, I don't think he gets to 30 this year. He's on a 27 stolen base threat or pace. I think a little bit he starts to smell that contract a little. I think he might have be a little bit more hesitant still in a couple of bags.
That's fair, too.
Not just like across the board, but if he had like 100% aggression like in the last couple of years, I think he tones it down to like 90. Like, is he going to steal second base whenever the team's up five runs?
No.
I don't think so.
Nope.
He did that in the past. Does he continue to do that going forward? I don't think
so. Business decisions are a more popular thing these days.
Closer and closer he gets to that contract, I think the less and less likely, or to free agency, the less and less likely, I think, is for his aggression to turn down a notch. Just slightly.
Now, why would his aggression turn down when he's eyeing a next contract?
Injuries.
But wouldn't he also then want, you know, back of the baseball card to have more steals?
He brings so much more to the table than that I think that's like, that's far off sidebar.
If he has 30 stolen bases versus 24, does that impact his contract at all? I don't think so.
I guess it's giving the agent and in the negotiating room another thing to point to. Like, I mean, look, we could say, and I agree with you, that, you know, 24 isn't that actually that less meaningful than 30.
Yeah.
But being able to say I was 30-30 or, hell, even on the way upside 40-40 is something that would be powerful, I think, in a negotiating.
I think as long as you have 100-plus RBIs and 30 to 40 bombs, general managers and teams know exactly what you can do, and they know you can run. You're capable of doing it, and they're probably going to want to use that once they sign you as more of a tool. I think the big thing is the more substantial numbers like HRs and ribbies.
No, I think it's a good argument, and it certainly is something you put on a resume, right? I think that it would impact arbitration more than the open market because it's a good point. It's a good argument. But put yourself in your GM shoes now. If you put yourself in your GM shoes and everything else is the same, with one exception, Tucker, 30 stolen bases versus 22, is it going to impact what you offer him?
No, it wouldn't. I'm not coming from that aspect. I think the agent might ask for a little bit more if he's able to. You know, they always put these stats out of Kyle Tucker or whatever the player is, the only player to do this many things. I always did that with James
Harden. Acuna was the first one to go nuts.
Like, he's the only player to have this, you know, really manufactured stat line. So if Kyle Tucker could put himself in some sort of conversation like that, I think that gives the agent extra ammo to maybe ask for a little bit more.
I think it's a good counter argument. I just don't put much weight in it.
Was Acuna the first one to do, 40 bombs and 70 stolen bases or something like that?
Acuna, was he
really? 40-70?
No one had even done 40-60, and he did 40-70.
He did 40-70 last year?
He did 40-70.
I didn't even realize he did 40-70.
Which
his
completely
numbers
overshadowed
stupid,
Corbin Carroll, I think, going 30-50.
Yep.
Like, no one even talked about it because Acuna went 40-70.
Yeah, what a season. How about batting average for Kyle Tucker? His career high in average is 294. Did that in 21. He's currently at 298.
I can see it. I think it's in reach. I think definitely. I think it's a better offensive lineup. I don't know, you know, depending on what they do in the two-hole, it could be even better. But I think that from a hitting perspective, he seems to have found his groove. You know, he the way he hits lefties, and Yordan both, tells you that he has no problem hitting for average. So I think it's definitely, I think it's attainable.
I think his batting average would actually finish higher if the Astros weren't good. I think you would get better pitches to hit.
Yeah.
Because you get sixth through ninth inning and a team's up by four runs against you, you're not going to be pitching Tucker as carefully as you might, and you're going to get lower leverage pitchers.
Yeah.
So I think that the batting average actually increases whenever you're not as good a team in a weird way. And then the final one is OPS. His career high prior to this year was 917. He also did that in 2021. His OPS currently is at 978.
I think definitely. I think if we're looking at those kind of numbers and the home run numbers going up, the average, I think that's absolutely in play.
I think he crushes this one. I think he shatters
this
it.
This is the only one besides home runs that I'm super, super confident in. Like, I think all the ones we mentioned, I think he's got a chance at. But home runs and OPS, I think he smashes both of them.
Yeah, I do too. 3-1-6-7, as soon as Breggy leaves this offseason, I can see them extending Tucker.
I can't.
I don't either.
I just can't. I just think that what he's looking for is going to be totally different than what Yordan signed for. And he's going to be looking to break the bank, and he's looking to do it for a lot of years. And I don't think the Astros are going to be on board for that.
I think that what Kyle Tucker is going to get on the open market is going to be higher than the Astros' price range.
Is it over what Bobby Witt got?
Well, yeah, I think so. Because Bobby Witt, they bought out his league like minimum stuff. Like,
yeah.
Bobby Witt got his after his rookie year. So they bought out his two...
I think he played two seasons.
Okay, so they bought out 1 year of pre-arbitration, and they bought out three arbitration years.
Right.
So if you do that, you bought out 4 years of club control, that's automatically going to be cheaper. Kyle Tucker's contract, is, unless they do one this offseason, would buy out at minimum 1 year of team control. And it's very likely that he just enters free agency with, you know, 0 years of team control left. So, yeah, he'll get higher than Witt. What did Witt get?
It was right around 10 years, $300 million.
And now he was younger, though. Like, Tucker might not get the 10 years. Tucker might get seven
right.
or eight, but I think he gets, like, $35
million. Because I think that's probably, if I'm Kyle Tucker's agent, that's where I'm starting at.
$310 million.
Yeah, like,
or from an agent perspective,
I would negotiate,
you want 10
years. Yeah, I would negotiate off of that, but that's where I'm starting with.
Now, I would also say that what Kyle Tucker gets in free agency, I will advocate the Astros not sign that.
Absolutely.
Like, that's my prediction. My prediction is Kyle Tucker's demands are going to be too high than what the Astros are willing to pay, and then I'm going to defend the Astros for not paying it. That's my prediction on that whole free
agency. We've said it all along. You and I have been in lockstep on that one. I just don't think he's going to be an Astro after this current contract, because I think that what he and his agent are after for does not go in sync with what the Astros traditionally have said they're willing to do.
That said, his baseball savant excites me. All right, 713-780-ESPN. What are the worst takes of the week? What belongs on Bad Take Boulevard? 713-780-3776. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Time to welcome some new takes.
Right this way.
To Bad Take Boulevard.
If only there was something in your head to control the things you say.
It's the dumbest argument ever.
With the Killer Bees.
Can I just say that I'm an idiot for listening to you?
No one is an idiot for listening to us. So Killer Bees broadcasting live, Wakefield Crowbar. A bunch of specials. We'll talk about those a little bit later. All weekend long, Cinco de Mayo, though. Tomorrow, Tejano night. With Los Clásicos, 8 p.m., no cover. No cover Saturday for UFC 301, the Canelo fight. And then Sunday, mariachis, DJ, drink specials as well for Cinco de Mayo. All right, what belongs on Bad Take Boulevard, 713-780-3776. Here's the first one. This one comes from Stephen A. Smith. Listen to Stephen A. Smith's take on Mike Trout after his injury.
I've grown disgusted with his lack of availability. But these oblique injuries, you're running around the base, you catch a hamstring injury, you're running out a fly ball, and all of a sudden something gets tweaked. What the hell is going on? I think you talking about karma with the New York Knicks. How about this? How about this, doggy? Maybe it's karma for him that he stayed with the Angels.
What does that mean?
So stupid.
Karma,
man.
That he stayed with the Angels? We're not going to respect loyalty here?
Stephen A. on baseball, it's just, and you and I have had this conversation before, I don't care how big you get and how many production assistants you have, some of his faux pas on baseball have just been brutal. But his takes, he just doesn't follow the game like that. But that's ridiculous.
Yeah, this is, I mean, you're not really respecting loyalty. You're not, like, what did you want him to do? You wanted Mike Trout to demand a trade and leave the Angels? Like, that's what we're rooting for now? That's what we're celebrating? And when you're not demanding a trade, we're going to mock you and ridicule you for being loyal to the team you signed a contract with.
Because you didn't want to leave the Angels.
It makes absolutely no sense to me.
This is, he went back. I remember when Ausmus got the job with the Angels, and he kept saying that Socha was the manager. And he did it multiple times. It's like, oh, someone really? At least correct him or something. But it just shows he just doesn't, look, he doesn't, he's so busy, he doesn't follow everything. I'll give him the benefit of that. But come on, man.
Yeah, that, Mad Tech Boulevard, Stephen A. Smith, who lives on this list. We know that Tank Dell, unfortunately, got shot at a nightclub in Florida. All reports are that he's okay, that he's fine. He's back in Houston, according to Nick Caserio. After he was shot, after the tweet went out, there was a man, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. It's Mike Brindisi. Mike BTV on Twitter. He tweeted, and he since deleted this tweet, he commented on the tweet and said, "Also, I hope your boy bleeds out." Shrug emoji, shock face emoji.
Yeah, I saw it when it happened, and he was, I think he was engaged with a Texans fan or a Houstonian in some way, shape, or form. But then he followed it up with that, and immediately Texans Twitter, rightfully so, was just on the attack going at him. And then he tried to have some responses, like, you know, that he was kidding or he was trying to back it down a little bit. And then all of a sudden he just flat out disappeared.
This is psychotic behavior.
Correct.
To have that sort of response because you're heartbroken over an ex-girlfriend, that's weird. Like, you're rooting for a guy to die.
That's just awful, right?
At least you said, like, maybe you weren't rooting for it, but you said it out loud on the internet.
And he's like a writer, producer, whatever, for ESPN Plus.
Yeah.
People are, like, sending it to ESPN and calling for his job, but you set yourself up for it. You did it to yourself on a public forum to say something that disgusting. There's going to be repercussions in a lot of cases.
It says ESPN Plus, Ithaca College. He probably produces games for Ithaca that air on ESPN Plus.
He's also a stand-up comedian.
Is he really?
Yeah. Because someone was banging on him, too, saying, "Your comedian, your comedy sucks, too."
Man, that's tasteless there. Not a great look. He's a Yankee guy, which...
What do we know that's a Yankee guy that went to Ithaca College that worked at an ESPN-type setup?
Was he from Ithaca? He was a bomber from Ithaca? I didn't know he was from Ithaca.
The Red Weasel.
I didn't know he was from Ithaca.
Yep.
My mother put me on Bad Take Boulevard because I got that actress wrong yesterday. I already forgot who it was, too.
Alyssa Milano?
Alyssa Milano, yeah. It was not. I said Denise Richards. It was Alyssa Milano who had the GoFundMe for her son's travel ball. Yeah, my mom put me on Bad Take Boulevard for that. Channel 2, sorry to do this to you, Blankers. You don't have to say anything. KPRC 2, their social media, this is another Tank Dell tweet. They posted this story with Tank Dell as the picture. It sends you to a website. It says, "Who is Tank Dell? Houston Texans wide receiver recovering after being shot in Florida." It says, "Who is Tank Dell?"
I want to say that I believe, and you've made this point before, but whether it was the Kron specifically, but the Kron's Twitter page at least, or one of their social media accounts, also asked the question, "Who is Tank Dell in the Florida shooting?" And I'm going, are you kidding me to be a Houston outlet and ask the question, "Who is Tank Dell?"
This is the only place I saw it. I think that they messed up. I think they meant to say, "How is Tank Dell?"
Right.
You think that's what happened
here? I think
here?
It's possible.
No, I actually don't. Because I think this was aimed at, like, the super, super casuals.
Like the news-oriented people.
Yeah, like someone who would have seen Tank Dell in the news, who's not a sports fan. I'll just throw my mom into this. This is how my mom would have found out about it. She would have seen Tank Dell's name in the news and go, "Who's that?" And so this article is for people who have heard that something happened with someone named Tank Dell in the city, and now they're trying to find out, okay, something happened. Who is it? What happened? I think that's what this
yeah,
is.
Yeah, I think it was where it wasn't listed as a sports story.
Right.
It was the national news covering the fact that there was a mass shooting at a VIP party in Florida, and then Houstonians were obviously hyper-focused on Tank Dell being there, being involved in it, to where that might have lent itself to why they asked the question.
Jeremy still doesn't like it.
It says digital content producer, and it's Click 2 Houston. And when you read the story, it's like the lead and the sub-lead talks about like how he currently is doing. Now, the last two paragraphs do say like he was selected in the 69th overall pick, his outstanding season, blah, 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 blah. I don't know. That's a huge mystery. We need this on Unsolved Mysteries.
I could do some investigation on it.
Now,
you got an inside source?
I might.
Why I think that you could be right here, Brian, is because I think the backlash, if they got the typo wrong, they would have fixed it.
Right.
And they haven't. It still says who
and not
how. I
think it's aimed at super casual.
I think you're probably right.
More of a news audience, like the majority of their people on the website.
Still Bad Take Boulevard worthy, though.
Uh-huh.
Who is Tangdale? Who are you talking to? We had a texter yesterday that said Boban and Yao have the same skill level, just played in two different NBAs.
That's
absolutely an
all-timer. Ridiculous.
We need to put this in the end of the
year
bracket.
This is in the bracket. This is in
the
Bad Take
bracket for the end of the year. Yeah, this is an all-timer. I don't know what else is in the bracket. So I know, was it you, Jeremy, and Joe that thought frogs weren't animals?
No, I was the one that argued.
It was you and Joe. Yeah. Okay, so that's going to be hard to beat, but this one needs
Thanks,
to be
Brian.
The bracket with it.
That one is going to be hard to beat.
Had to bring it up, Brian. I thought they might have forgotten about it by now.
No, it's in the bottom of the Google Doc.
Oh, great.
This one from the Suns, whenever they put the big three together. Devin Booker saying it respectfully, I don't know how teams are going to guard us. Kevin Durant, you can't guard all of us at once. And then a Suns fan side, good luck to opposing defenses this season. They're going to need it.
Next year. I saw this, and I did I text it to you? I'm not sure, but when I first saw this, I was like, maybe in the future, but again, maybe not, but maybe full foot in mouth when you try and look back at that one.
Yeah, that one lands on Bad Take Boulevard.
Did you see today, too, that James Jones, who, by the way, as a general manager, was doing great until the new ownership took over and told them who they wanted, but he had to come out there today in a news conference and say, we're keeping our starting lineup intact.
Yeah.
The only three that they could get rid of are Nurkic, KD, and Booker.
And their owner actually came out and like doubled down and said, we're not in a good situation. We're in a great situation.
Stupid.
He's got to say that, though.
I know, but it's bad. That quote, that headline is Bad Tape Boulevard worthy.
That is true. 3404, what if by... Who is Tangdell? They're trying to paint a picture of who he is to everyone or how he fits into this news story. I think it's probably Brian's point.
That's kind of going along with what I said,
yeah. To the super casuals. And then 0002, Stephen A. Smith, said a dead guy was still a great player. Bad Stephen A. I don't remember that.
I don't remember the net player. This texter might be thinking of Colin Cowherd with Dwayne Haskins, right?
I think that might be
right. I think that's what
he's
thinking
about.
The
one that I'm reminded of is there was a Monday night game where one of the Chargers starting tight end was out for the year.
Yes.
And he was like, he's going to be a big factor in the game tonight. And he went on and on and on. It was like, he's out for the year.
Yeah, and to expand upon your point, we were I don't remember the exact name, but you made the point that Stephen A. often gets these things wrong on baseball. But as you point out, he's not limited to it for football as well. Really, the only thing you could kind of trust him on is Knicks basketball, and even then, he's talking about guys like Quentin Grimes that are traded away. So,
but he's made his living covering the NBA.
His living saying every NBA star is going to be a Knicks player.
Yeah, well, he started the whole rumor that no one could back up that Booker wants to be a Knick.
I saw that.
That is our illustrious list of Bad Take Boulevard. Today in the NFL is the deadline for teams to pick up the fifth-year option for 2021 first-rounders. Texans don't have one, but we're a year away from the 22 class, which means they have Derek Stingley and they have Kenyon Green. Make your call right now. Will those two guys, none of those guys, have their fifth-year option picked up in a year? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Wakefield Crowbar on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios located at Wakefield Crowbar. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
drink specials all week throughout Cinco de Mayo from today through Sunday at Wakefield Crowbar. $4 Modelo Draft, $4 Hornito Margaritas, $29 Dos Equis Towers, $2 Mangonada Shots. If you come today, $6 cheeseburgers, $6 makers, $25 Modelos, happy hour all the time until 6, 50-cent boneless wings, $10 specialty pizzas, $3 Modelo Big Beer, $4 lemon drop shot, $5 green tea shot, $29 high noon bucket, and action-packed at Wakefield Crowbar this week. Tomorrow's Tejano Night with Los Clásicos, free music, no cover. Saturday, Kentucky Derby by day, and then fights at night. Canelo Alvarez, UFC 301. You know how much they charge for cover here?
Zero.
Nothing. And then Sunday, Cinco de Mayo drink specials, DJ Mariachi performance in the afternoon. It's going to be outstanding. All right, before we talk about the Texans' fifth-year options next year, not this year, but you have two coming down the pike next year with Kenyon Green, Derek Stingley. You have to make the decision in a year before they go into their fourth season. Before we do that, let's give away a gift card to Highway Cantina. Highway Cantina, our featured restaurant this week. A great Tex-Mex destination before and after ball game, certainly for Cinco de Mayo. Thanks to Highway Cantina, our featured restaurant this week. So what are my two? I have three staples for a Mexican restaurant. I have three things that I judge Mexican restaurants off of. First person to call 713-780-3776 and name two of the three. You'll win a gift card to Highway Cantina in Edo. 713-780-3776. What are two of my three pillars of any good Tex-Mex play? 713-780-3776. All right, today's the deadline for teams in the NFL to pick up the fifth-year option for the class of 2021. First-rounders, obviously. Texans don't have anybody. That was the Davis Mills draft. Didn't get him until the third. We're a year away from the 22 class where the Texans had two. They had two first-rounders. They had Derek Stingley. They had Kenyon Green. So you call your shot. The Texans will pick up the fifth-year option next year on Stingley's fifth year. Yes or no?
Yes, absolutely. I think that what you saw last year was a precursor to what he can be for you going forward. We know the injuries were a concern when he was drafted. We know the comparisons were there with Sauce when he was drafted. He lived up to billing last year. I expect him to do it again this year. I think he's a very key and valuable core piece to this team, and I think that they will absolutely do that.
I really don't see a scenario where they don't pick up his option. I'm talking injury. Like, I'm talking injury, too. Like, if he gets hurt week one, tears his ACL, I still think they pick up his fifth-year option. I do not see a scenario that exists where Derek Stingley does not have his fifth-year option picked up. Is there one out there that exists?
Maybe because they re-signed him to a long-term deal before then.
Yeah.
That's an outside shot because they'd be leaving. They'd have 2 years before, yeah. Maybe 2 years ahead of that decision. But to me, that's the only way he doesn't get the fifth-year option.
Unless it's just a devastating injury to where there's a lot of concern.
Like an Achilles injury.
Yeah, an Achilles injury. Otherwise, I don't see it. I don't see it as a real possibility.
All right, so that's a slam dunk. Derek Stingley is a slam dunk, and maybe the next guy is too. Kenyon Green. What do you have to see from Kenyon Green in 2024 to where at this point, you know, this is the deadline, this point next year, Kenyon Green has his fifth-year option picked up?
He has to show he could be a starting lineman in the NFL. He has to show that he can stay healthy, that he can do more than run block, that he can do the things that this team needs him to do because of how vitally important the offensive line is when you have a quarterback like C.J. Stroud, and the fact that he's been a massive disappointment based on where he was taken. And if you're going to pick up his option, that means you're paying him to do the things that from where he was drafted, what he was supposed to have already done. He damn well better do it this year, or it's a no-brainer on the flip side of the Stingley conversation. I don't see a scenario where they would even do it.
So how good of a starter does he have to be, though?
I think he's got to be a guy where when we have a conversation in the offseason, we're not questioning who's the starter at left guard. Like, there's no question.
He just wins the job, and he's your left guard for the next 3 to 5 years.
And I think the Texans have left the door open for this, because if they were not willing to do this, they would have drafted a left guard in the draft. By taking a guy that everyone is telling us that is offensive tackle only in the second round, I think maybe not that they're putting all their eggs in the Kenyon Green basket, but they're definitely leaving the door far and wide open for that possibility.
It's the conversation that you and I have had previously, Jeremy, and the fact that whether you like it or not, it's smart business or not, it seems like when general managers do something like this with a guy that's tagged with tags to their name, of I went out and did this in the first round and I took a guard. They're going to give him every opportunity to start. And because of the fact that you have options with playing musical chairs with some of your other guys, Patterson and Scruggs, you can do some things that if he doesn't work out, you could still get by this year. But I think the message, to Brian's point, was clearly sent that this is your job to lose, or at least you're in the mix to earn the job that you should have already earned.
The runway's all his.
Yeah.
He's the first plane you're looking to land on the runway. Like,
yep.
He's going to get every opportunity to be the starting left guard for the Houston Texans. When we had Cody Davis on earlier in the show, you know, he talked about, like, Juice Scruggs at left guard. Does that mean Jared Patterson's your center?
Yeah.
Like, I don't really love the scenario there. Like, it's an alternative. It's an option. But it's certainly not plan A. Plan A is Kenyon Green. And it's like what Brian said. It's because of how you handle the draft. Like, the Texans had a chance whenever they drafted Fisher in the second round. They could have drafted Cooper Beebe.
Yep.
Cooper Beebe could have very easily been your day one left guard. You know, we talk about the Texans tipped their hand on, you know, they're a nickel defense, not a 4-3 defense, because they drafted potentially a nickel corner with their first pick. Didn't really address their third linebacker spot, which is weak, I think, in Henry To'o. So that told us that the Texans tipped their hand that they're a nickel defense. I think they tipped their hand on Kenyon Green. I think they tipped their hand that they believe that, and they might be wrong, but I think they tipped their hand on they believe Kenyon Green's going to be their starting left guard, and he's going to be solid. Like, he's going to be serviceable at minimum.
We talked about, and Caserio talks about position versatility, and it came into play even with Lassiter. But they like offensive linemen, you've seen it with Howard, that they like position versatility with guys in their different position groups. The fact of the matter is you have position versatility with on your roster right now to cover for Kenyon Green if he doesn't end up being the guy, but they have every intention of giving him every opportunity to finally prove, and probably in his last shot at it, to prove that he is worthy of being the starting left guard on a good football team.
I'm going to nitpick you a little. I don't think they have positional flexibility. I think that they have the depth, because I don't think that they have players that they think that can play multiple positions on the offensive line. Like, they're basically telling us Titus Howard's going to stick at tackle. Maybe Juice Scruggs, center left guard. Maybe Jared Patterson, center left guard. But I really don't see many offensive linemen on this team that can play, like, tackle guard, guard center.
No, but Juice,
center tackle.
Juice can play guard and he can play center. Patterson can be a guy that has some flexibility.
Yeah, those are the only
and,
two I
and
see.
And Howard. Though. I know that Howard doesn't want to do it, and they probably
but he
would.
He stinks at it.
And they'd probably. Well, I think Juice Scruggs stinks at being a left guard in this league, too. Mm. I think that he should just be the center. And you got Patterson as a backup, and maybe Patterson's a guy you can work on some position flexibility with.
Yeah.
But I think, in my heart of hearts, and I said this prior to last season even starting when we knew what was going to happen with Kenyon Green, I'm tired of the musical chairs. The offensive line still needs to also develop continuity, no matter how good each individual might be at their position. And you've got too much talent on that offensive line now to be moving Howard down to the other side and to guard when you sign him to a big money deal to be your right tackle.
Yeah, offensive line isn't five fingers, it's one fist.
That's right.
Space City Kev, plan A should be Green. Plan B should be Patterson playing center. C would be Howard. I don't think that I wouldn't go as far to say that Juice Scruggs stinks at left guard.
Wasn't great.
But I think he was, like, average. I think he was serviceable. I do agree that his potential and like, his skill set is at center. I'd rather him be my center for the next 5 years than left guard. I really don't want him at left guard either. Other text on this, 5798, I pick up Derek Stingley's fifth-year option right now. I get it, but you don't really need to.
Right.
Because, yeah, if he does get that, no, never mind, I'm not going to say it. Kenyon Green will have to prove himself as a capable lineman this season to even be considered for the fifth-year option. I think I like Brian's parameters. I like his foundation, his baseline. Like, he has to become the guy that at minimum is your left guard. You look at the depth chart, he's your left guard. You're not having the conversation of, well, are they going to draft one in the second round to replace him? Are they going to sign a veteran free agent to replace him? I think that he has to answer those questions. 0315 says, pay Stingley now. He'll be one of the best, if not the best, defensive back in the league. I see where he's coming from here. Like, pay him early, that way it looks like a discount later. The problem, though, in the NFL nowadays is when players feel like they get underpaid, they just demand a new contract. So, like, baseball,
it doesn't really take care of the
problem. You're not going to save anything long term.
Like, baseball, whenever you lock up a young player, you've locked him up. Like, he's not going to demand a new contract. So you've locked him into a fixed number that you like.
He could demand it. He ain't getting it.
Where have you ever seen that in baseball?
Oh, you've seen players' agents that have asked to be for more money. But the contracts are so lock, stock, and barrel anyway that teams are just going to say, you can demand a trade or ask for a trade if you want, but I don't think you're going to get any extra money.
Most of what you're talking about usually, though, comes through like the opt-outs, like a few years into the contract.
Yeah,
they kind of build that into the contract.
What have you seen a player threaten to hold out in baseball? Like, that doesn't happen in baseball.
No, not a hold
out.
But
football, it's like, okay, they went from being the third top-paid cornerback now to their 20th, and they're like, well, give me a top five money. So locking up a player early in football doesn't really add up. Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But I see where you're coming from, because I do agree in Stingley's long term. The only thing that's a little bit of a hang up, not that it's a hang up, it just lives in your mind, injuries.
Yeah.
And Stingley's has shown that he's had 1 year of it. 6761 says that Green should have been cut. He's an Aggie bum. We're not going to read Aggie bum on the flagship for the Texas A&M Aggies. We can't read Aggie bum when we're the flagship for Texas A&M. Nice try, 6761. All right, 713-780-ESPN. I'll make this statement. Nick Caserio is easily the best GM of the big three in this city. If you want to argue me, 713-780-3776. But who is second? Who is the second best GM in the city of Houston? It's the Killer Bees broadcasting live from Wakefield Crowbar on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.